Welcome again to Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. Nathan, I'm drinking scotch. I assume you are drinking Guinness. If the situations are progressing as they have been over the past few weeks.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. No, really, really, I do try to stick to Guinness. I just hadn't made a run to a liquor store last week. So that's why I was just like, what do I have kicking around the house? Ooh, Prosecco. Done.
Works for me. Now, Nathan, you had an announcement for us at the top of the podcast. Hit it.
Basically, what I want to do is Jada Gamercast wants to kind of do a little charity thing. So what's going on is for my demons, I want a Herald of Khorne. So I'm ordering the Forge World one, which comes with a Demon Prince of Khorne that I have absolutely no use for. So what I've decided to do is I'm going to hold a raffle. What's shaken is I'm going to order that that Demon Prince on Monday evening. That way this podcast has gone up and people have a chance to listen to it.
Yep.
And I'm going to ask for standard shipping. And basically from the moment you're made aware of the contest, because I did put a blog post up on Saturday, up until my Forge World comes in, anyone who donates blood for the blood god,
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, 40k humor.
40k humor indeed. So anyone that donates blood and sends an email go to the website and the blog, you can get the email address there. But if you donate blood and send the proof that I ask for there, or if you can't donate blood for whatever reason, if you make a $25 donation to the Red Cross, we're going to give you an entry ballot. As soon as that Demon Prince gets here from Forge World, which should be 4 to 6 weeks-ish, because it is standard shipping, not express, I'm just basically going to take every entry, toss it in, and draw it, and the winner gets a Demon Prince.
And on top of that, I will be tossing in $60 worth of Games Workshop gift certificates. So for whoever is in on the raffle, that's money to build an army plus awesome prizes, all for a good cause. So we hope to see some entries coming in here. And like Nathan says, if you can't donate blood for whatever reason, if you got tattoos or, you know, you're promiscuous or whatever, you know, you can definitely just donate $25 for a very good cause, especially with all of the disaster happenings out there in Japan right now. It's something that everybody can do, so we hope to see a lot coming in, and you know, it's for a good cause. Community unite!
Woo! Oh, and also, if you want multiple entries, just keep making $25 donations to the Red Cross. I will accept it.
Oh yeah, we're not gonna turn them down and be like, hey, what the hell? No, nothing like that. Okay, so we're gonna open today's show with an email. This email is from Diego. He says, hey, Lang and Nathan, it's me, Diego, from the Massacre on an Instavan 5 tournament. Just a quick question. I'm starting an Orc and Goblin army for fantasy, and I was wondering if you could give me some advice with the new book that has come out. Thanks for the great podcast, Diego. Well, Diego, oddly enough, we're reading your email at the top of the show, where we are going to be talking about the new Orc and Goblin army book for fantasy, which I am exceptionally excited to talk about. I can't, you know, it doesn't matter how crazy this week was, fuck it, I'm looking forward to what to talking about this this army book. So Nathan, you just picked it up today. I've had it for about a week, so I've really been able to soak it in. What's your first impressions just about the overall look of it, the hardcover? I've heard some people bitching about the hardcover. I'd heard a couple people who really like it.
I love it. Honest to God, I think, you know, wow, why hasn't this happened before? I mean, I know a lot of people balk at the price tag because that shit don't cost a dollar. You know, it's expensive. I get that. But I absolutely love it. This book is going to hold up better because, I mean, I'm a gamer. I'm a gamer first. I can say that all of the soft cover codexes, like usually if it's my main army, I need two or three of them just because they fall apart. From
yes.
riding around in my case, from gaming, constantly pulling out and looking at it. So to have a better quality, because, I mean, the binding on it is fantastic.
Yes.
That's always been Games Workshop.
Floss binding.
Yes, Downfall has been terrible bindings.
Yeah, well, especially since they moved all of the actual army lists to the back of the army books and codex. Before, it used to be in the middle of the book, so, you know, if it kind of split, it split somewhere in the middle. It didn't really ruin the book, but any of the newer army books since they've come out, you spend all your time on those last 10 pages. They end up falling out. They end up breaking the spine. I mean, it's just... Mm-hmm. I absolutely love the hardcover. I mean, you know what? I'm not going to bitch at $10 more. You know, out of all the Games Workshop price increases that I bitch about, this is the one where, honestly, I love it, and I think that it's well worth the difference in price. It's going to hold up a heck of a lot better. Some people had said that they don't like it because hardcovers tend to scratch, but
sort of soft covers, really.
Yeah, soft covers scratch, too. They also rip quite regularly. So I like this quite a bit, and also... this is where you can tell that I'm really a gamer. I like the fact that it's really rigid because then I can use it to like brace things in my case when I put it on top. Like it'll be a nice even pressure coming down as opposed to like this wobbly codex on top that doesn't really provide much. So, you know, all in all, I'm all for that. I was very impressed with the full color and everything that they had put into it. But beyond that, let's get into the real meat of it. There are a lot of changes.
Really? You thought so?
I did think so. Well, I actually play an Orc and Goblin army, so...
See, and that was really my big thing, because I was reading through it, and I'm just like, ah, you know, it feels more orky, which I love. I love that they're putting flavor back in, because, I mean, there have been tons and tons of army books and codexes that just rip the flavor and heart out of an army. I'm looking at you, Robin Crudace, with the atrocity that is my Tyranid Codex.
Yeah.
Watching you.
It's like, it's like 10 episodes in a row we've bitched about the Tyranid. You just can't let an episode go by without bringing that goddamn Tyranid Codex.
It has been my army since 1998, okay? Andy Chambers did wonderful jobs in 2000 and 2004, and then Robin Crudace just, like, shat all over that. So fuck you. Not that you're listening, but anyway. Oh, well.
Okay, but here's why.
Okay.
The changes are rather broad, and it changes the army as a whole, but it keeps the theme. The biggest changes were the weird imbalances that you ended up just ignoring or that really made no sense to begin with. Choppas is one of the huge ones. For the most part, Choppas started as being like only on the first turn, only if you're charging, only if that's the only goddamn thing you have in your hand does it give you
like
plus
an
one strength.
Ogre club.
Right, you know, so it was like, you know, you had to balance this idea of just like, well, do I want shields? Do I want the extra attack? Or do I want the extra strength? Now, obviously, everything is a choppa. If they have the choppa's rule, that means it doesn't matter what kind of weapon they have, whether it's a magic weapon, whether they're mounted, on foot, doesn't matter. When they are in the first turn of combat, it gives them plus one strength. I absolutely adore
So do I. Like, when I saw that rule, honestly, my first thought was about time. Because really, unless they're orc biggins, unless they're a special unit, why are orcs as strong as my elves? You know, like, really, my elves are weak. They're pansies. That's why I love Lore of Beasts on my wood elves, because I finally get to boost to strength 4, and it's, like, world-changing to me. Why were orcs hamstrung with that strength 3, but at least now with the chopper rule being... across the board, with spears, with hand weapon shield, with anything that you possibly want, you get that plus one strength in the first round of combat, charging or otherwise. Huge.
Right.
Absolutely huge.
No, it is fantastic. They added a bunch of cool new units. They added a bunch of cool new rules. They took our advice because obviously they were listening to the podcast when I talked about the big thing that I really wanted was for it to be a little bit more of a horde. So a couple of choices came down in points costs.
Really? I was going to call you out on that. Because like I said, I was looking at it and I'm just like, so everything's the same and some of the rules are a little more orky.
No. Biggins are like 2 points cheaper. And
but they're still 0-1 unless you take a special character. You know, so it's not like... You know, that change is just going to be like, and with that, I have 100 more orcs. You know,
yeah, but
I mean, it's it's the same points cost. I mean, hell, Orc Boys went up a point in cost.
But no, that's just like, all that shows is that you don't play an Orc and Goblin army, because your Biggins is always your biggest, beefiest center of your goddamn army unit. So it's going to take up the most points in your army, and it's going to really be the centerpiece. Now, the other one that came down in points dramatically was Orc Boar Boys. They came down like 6 points. Yeah, so and they also get the Chapa's rule. So their spears are hitting like lances on the first turn of combat, whether they're, you know, they get the extra plus one whether they're charged or not. So they're actually pretty beefy.
I'm sorry, but Savage Orc Boar Boys is still the tits.
Savage Orc Boar Boys are pretty freaking awesome now.
Frenzy, and I can have a pair of hand weapons on a mount?
Yes.
Phenomenal.
Absolutely great. You can run Goblin Wolf Chariots as units, which I think is awesomely cool since they're pretty light. Spear Chuckers can misfire, which I think is fantastic.
See, again, and it's things like that that just make it feel orky. Like, I was going through all the special rules, and I'm just like, I love it to death because it really seems to capture the imagination and capture everything that the orcs and goblins are and represent that in the rules. And that's why I was just like, I like the book. I do. I'm not saying it's a bad book. But like I said, as a not as an orc player, other than it capturing the flavor, it looks like the same book to me. It really does.
Now, a bunch of stuff got cheaper. Giants are 5 whole points cheaper. Whole points. Now, you can take that extra goblin you always wanted. You know, but, like, they added a bunch of different squig units. And they also added, obviously, the big mega spider, which I think is awesomely cool. And they really balanced out goblins. Like, regular, before, it was like, there's no point in taking anything other than night goblins. Because night goblins, you can put fanatics and netters and shit like that. They'd actually make them worthwhile. The nasty skulkers are fucking fantastic. And again, it's like, you're giving regular, good old regular goblins the same kind of cool stuff that night goblins always have. Because before, it was just, there was no point.
I'm sorry, but how can we be talking about awesome changes and not talk about the fact that goblin spider riders can assault buildings with their mounts?
Yes.
Make them the only cavalry unit that can assault a building and count as one. Oh, it's like I said, I love the rules. I think, you know, finally about time, you know, orc and goblin players, because, you know, not bragging, but in all of 7th edition, since their book came out, I'd never lost to an Orc and Goblin player with my Wood Elves. Like, it was such an uphill struggle for them because they only had the same 2 or 3 units.
Yep.
You know, and it's just that their magic was okay, but not game shattering. Because, I mean, I ran into a, you know, in 7th edition, an army that was a level 4 with 3 level 2s. Just absolutely, you know, out-muscling with power dice. It didn't really amount to anything because the Orc magic couldn't. So, I mean, I like that. It brought them, like I said, you know, it's kind of like an about time, like, you know, it'll finally make them to the point where there's many viable lists. And I look forward to playing the book. Honestly, I do.
And I think the big thing is you really haven't played like the really competitive Orc and Goblin armies, because if you look out in like the UK, Australia, a lot of these other big wargaming communities, wargaming countries, you see a lot of Orc and Goblin fantasy players at the top of the tournament scene. There's tons of them. And the biggest thing that set them apart from other armies was with an experienced general and a really well-built list, you were in combat turn 2 most of the time. And there just wasn't enough damage that you could do in that short period of time. And especially now in 8th edition, where basically shooting is that much less effective for the most part. Mm-hmm. I mean,
look, really, I'm a Wood Elf army that dropped all bows because shooting is that much.
I'm
going to
take that back. I don't think it's less effective. I just think that you're dealing with a very different type of gameplay that kind of changes what shooting does, like how its mechanic affects the game. I wouldn't say it's less effective. I would just say that it has a different meaning in 8th edition than it does in 7th. And that was because of the power of the Wah rule, where you could, on turn 2, declare that, and then you roll all of those tests plus rank bonuses, and basically if you rolled a 6, they got an extra move. And it was really, really easy to get into combat with that extra move when you're playing on, you know, a 4-foot deep table.
It just, well, and And even then, they could cast a Waw in their magic face. Yes. So if you had a great shaman, then yep. you're going to declare your Waw, you're going to surge forward, you're going to cast your Waw, and then there you are.
Yeah, and I had a game where I was crushed because of that. But that has been removed from the game, for anyone who isn't aware. Now the power of the Waw can only be used on the turn where your general is charging into combat.
And only if he's a war boss. You don't have a war boss, you don't get a Waw.
Well, no, it's only if they have the power of the Waw rule.
Which right? only war bosses do, and one goblin special character.
Well, the one goblin special character, yeah, but it has to be an orc lord, essentially. Yep. I got confused there when you were like saying it had to be a war boss, but yes.
Well, yeah, but it can't be a shaman is my point. So you can't just slam wizards and be like, I get the Waw.
Yes. No, absolutely. But yes, when your general with the power of the Waw charges into combat, he gains D3 additional combat resolution, and any other orc unit in combat on the table also gains +1 combat resolution. So again, this is what really is kind of drawing me in about the Orc and Goblin army. I've already said, when you're in town next weekend, you and I are going to have a game. You're going to play a practice game with your demons. And yep. I'm going to put together my new Orc and Goblin army with 8th edition and really kind of replay this army. So, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it. But this kind of changes the dynamic of the Orc and Goblin army in the sense that it's so unorganized, but if you can just be organized enough to put 2 or 3 units into combat at a time with your general charging in. And what I love about this is it really does force Orc and Goblin players to lead from the front, you know, to get their general into combat, not hiding them in the back, no bunkering, nothing like that. Like really going for the gusto and playing very orky. And if you can do that, it'll really, really pay off. You know, because you don't want to do it where your general's the only person charging in that turn, and so he's the only one who gets the bonus. If you can get 3 or 4 other units into combat that turn, it's like, boom, that's huge. Mm-hmm. But none of this screaming across the table in literally like 2 turns garbage. It's very, very much now going to be, you know, a bit more of a game of planning, but still playing very orky, which I love about it. But we're going to get into a little bit of tactics here in just a bit, but I do want to now get in and start talking about, I think, the thing that really had my jaw dropping in this book, magic. Oh my God, the Orc and Goblin magic is insane. I mean, we expected that there would be like the cast it on a higher level and, you know, all that kind of big stuff. But I never expected it to be this dramatically awesome to this extent, because oh my God, like, these lores are insane. They're so good. You know, I was really worried that they were going to be really kind of paltry compared to the common lore lores of magic that we're seeing right now. But if if the succession of army books from this point on has magic that looks like this, I think that we're very, very quickly going to be moving away from those lores of magic from the Warhammer rulebook. Don't you think, Nathan? You still there with me?
No, I am. Honestly, I read the magic spells when the black box came in and skipped over it today. So I'm just like, all I remember reading is the lore attributes and level 6 of the Little Waw. So I'm just like, I love that spell. I think that one's fantastic.
You're so unformed. You said edit ass. Okay, here's the thing.
No, like I said, I remember reading it, and I was just like, it's good. It's in line, but I never thought that it was earth-shattering the way you're coming all over the place.
Well, see, the thing about this that makes it earth-shattering and makes me Hyman is basically the fact that you could look at the 8 lores of magic in the Warhammer rulebook, and you could almost pick one spell out of each of them that you want and put it into a lore, and that would be like this lore. Like, there's basically Fists of Gork, which makes your shaman into like a war boss, where he's fighting with, you know, +3 attacks and +3 strength, you know, and it's a remain in play for crying out loud. Cast on an 8. Like, there's just stuff that allows you to pick out characters and units. Massive spells that basically go boom, 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 all the way down the line. For the goblins, you know, the level 6 spell for the goblins is basically Purple Sun and like every other style of Purple Sun, where you get to pick what it does and tailor it to your opponent if you have the dice to make it happen, you know? magic spells that give everyone in a unit poison attacks. Like, that's enormous when you're running a horde.
Or when you buy the 100-point or 85-point banner.
We'll get to items. Yeah, we'll definitely get to items here.
Gives you poison, because then it's poison on a 5.
Yes, exactly. But I think that that's what really stands out with this for me. And the signature spells are both, like, exceptionally useful. But I think what's really fun about this, and which does kind of bring it down to a manageable level, is that on the orc side, almost all of the ranges are variable. They're random. Roll 4d6, and that's the range. You know, there's a couple of them on the goblin side, but most of the ones on the goblin side actually have standard ranges, so they're a little bit more dependable. But I just think that that's a lot of fun to me. And the fact that the lore attributes essentially mimic what was there before, as well, they kind of take into account magic items that you were stupid not to take in the previous version of this army book. I think it's just really, really smart, which kind of brings us to the magic items. There's 8.
Yep.
8 magic items. Now, one of the worries that we had when we had talked about 8th edition was the fact that we would see this power creep start to come in, where every new army book with all of these common magic items and all of these lores and all of this stuff that's in the 8th edition rulebook as quote-unquote common is going to start overloading these new armies with all of these new lores. And we had talked about the fact that it really was, you know, a shift in the dynamic of the game and the planning of the armies and trying to streamline it and balance it. And we see that right here. Now, people have bitched about it, but listen, I have, oh my God, I have 8 different armies. And I can tell you, in every list that I build, I use roughly 4 magic items standard. You know, and a lot of times they're common magic items. Like, I just, you know, every book has 4 or 5 magic items that you're crazy not to take. Right? And everything else, you just kind of shrug and you move on past it because it's either way too specific or it's overpriced for what it does. So now they're giving you 8 mother crazy badass items and banners and crap that it's just like, you're crazy not to turn them down. It's not about which 4 are you going to take out of 30 magic items. It's about how can you fit all 8 of these magic items into your army and just roll people, you know, or like what combos can you put
together? Yeah, because I mean magic resist d6, I mean poison attacks, a soft cover for a night goblin unit, and always dangerous terrain to charge them. Like, good God, no, I love the items, and I love that they went for that minimalist approach, because you basically have what, 50 common magic items in the main rule book.
Yes.
That if you were to add another 30, things just get retarded. And what I love about 8 is, even if you look at it from a very simplistic playtesting standpoint, it's a hell of a lot easier to look at it and not miss something game-breaking.
Yes.
Something that the ETC is going to ban because they just like dropping the ban hammer on everything. Yeah. Something that, hey, got to throw that jab in there, right?
Episode 1.
You know, and so it's just like there's nothing that is going to make the community do that sort of knee jerk, I need to ban this. Because even when you look at that 100-point sword that they have, that thing is hilarious. To me, that is the greatest magic item that anyone has ever thought up in the history of the game.
And I was just going to bring that up, too. When was the last time you saw 200-point or 300-point magic items in a book, in 3 books, that you were just like, must have? Outside of a rune fang, anytime there's a 100-point magic item in a book, you're almost always ignoring it.
Yep, pass.
Exactly. It's just too expensive for what it does, or it's not dependable enough, or it's not...
Yeah, but I mean, like, as far as I'm concerned, I would take a Black Orc Warboss, throw him on a Wyvern, and give him the 100-point sword.
Oh, see, but that's where I'm torn.
Because 100-point armor is also too...
It's impact hits. Impact hits, stomps, attacks, and all of his normal attacks. Not
and plus
the
D3
fact,
toughness, D3 so he'd be toughness, what, 6 to 8?
Yes!
Dude.
Oh my God!
No, and I mean, and I think that is Jeremy Vitok just being brilliant with this book. Like, you know, it's just, my hat goes off to him, because he really captured the essence of the book, and he made you have to make tough choices. Because, I mean, I was looking at it, and I was just like, man, I really like that spider kit. I love this, you know, Lord of the Little Wa, and I was pricing it out, and I'm like, you know, if I took a level 4 goblin shaman with the spider and the Book of Asher, he's like 550 points, and I'm just like, well, that's it. That's my lords.
Right.
I don't get a war boss. I don't, you know, I might be able to sneak in a goblin war boss because they're cheap as borscht. You know, but it's just, that's the thing. And so it's just like, you have to make hard choices. Do you want the really great magic, or do you want the really great combat? Do you want, you know, this? And just, I think the book is brilliant. It feels brilliantly balanced. There's nothing in there that makes me shake my head. Yeah. Unlike when we talk about the Grey Knight Codex, am I right? You know, so like I said, I love it. I think it's great. Orcs have always been an army where I'm always sort of on the fence about starting. This book will probably be when I start an orc army, because like I said, I think it's brilliant and it forces you to make hard choices. You cannot have everything you want.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to your characters.
Yeah.
So, you know, you gotta pick and choose. Cause I mean, if you were to go all out and take a 100-point item on your Lord and take a 100-point banner on your BSB, you know, you have to look at it and say 200 points. That's 40 orcs I don't have.
Yes.
You know, that's it.
If you talk about goblins, it's even worse. But a few other very cool things to note. Snotling pump wagons are now unbreakable, as the swarms are, which is great. And you can upgrade them with various...
Do they have the swarm rule as well?
No.
Okay, that's good.
They do have unstable. But before, you know, they're only toughness 4. They've got like 2 or 3 wounds. Like, they were just really easy to kill on the turn that they charged. So all you were really doing was putting this 40-point item in for the 2d6 impact hits.
Yeah.
But now it's like, oh, you can, you know, pedal really hard and have them, like, go really, really fast. They're unbreakable, so if you happen to survive, they just keep going. And you can upgrade them to the point where, like, yeah, they're more expensive. They're probably about twice as expensive as a normal pump wagon. But they've got all these really cool special abilities, what makes them, like, knight hunters or horde hunters or flankers or any number of things that just makes them really, really nice to have. So... I think that that's very, very cool. But it's stuff like that, like the Mangler Squigs and like all of those extra bits. And obviously the Super Giant Spider, I think, is really, really cool. The upgrades are awesome. I think the rules are really balanced. I think the point cost is, honestly, that's right around where I would put the points for it. I know that there's a couple people who are really, really worried about it. But for the most part, I mean, when we're talking about something that only has a 4+ save, you know, it goes down pretty damn fast.
Oh, yeah. You know, like, that's the thing. Because, I mean, you know, when you look at it, mass strength 4 is gonna be that thing's biggest downfall. Because, yes, I need 6s to wound. But with a 5+ save, it's not going to make a whole lot of those saves.
Well, yeah.
God forbid something strength 5. Like, you know, a unit of Chaos Warriors with halberds are going to drop it before it swings.
Yes.
End of discussion, you know. So, I mean, that's what I like about it, is it is a survivable beast. But it's not unkillable, I don't think it's too many points considering all of its abilities.
Well, I think what it really does for the army is it kind of fills a role that the Orc and Goblins haven't really had for a while, which is something on the table that you just can't afford to ignore, but at the same time, you feel like you should be shooting something else, you know? For instance, like my lizard men, the stegodons are that thing where it's like you can't ignore them, but every time you spend a turn shooting at them, you're just like, oh, those swords are just looking at me. Like, I can't be shooting this thing for 3 turns, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of other armies that have stuff like that, but, you know, I feel like this does feel that role really cool. And it's just a beautiful model. And, you know, I mean,
really, you don't think it's too big?
No, I don't think it's too big. Jesus. All right. Let's get into a little bit of tactical talk here.
Shouldn't we get into Diego's question? Because we did start with it, but we haven't actually addressed it yet.
Oh, are we? I thought like this whole episode was addressing his question.
Oh, okay. You know,
he just says, give me advice on the book. That's all he says. All
right, sure, okay. Hey, it's just because...
Nathan says, write a better question next time, Diego. Jeez. okay, so let's get into the tactical side of things. Let's start with starting an army. You know, where would you start?
Personally, me, I would decide what you want to do, because you know, you can do orcs of, you know, savage or regular flavor. You can do goblins. You can do night goblins. You know, all in your core, which is fantastic. You've got 1,000 different options. So for me, I think no matter what you choose, it can work. There are combinations, there are units, there are selections that can make anything work. Pick what you pick where you want to start. If you want to start with orcs, do that. You know, if you want, even take a look at the special characters.
Yeah, they have some very cool special characters, but
I think Gorbad, as both the general and the BSB with the 18-inch range and unlimited biggins, is phenomenal.
Yes, he's very, very cool. Especially now that, you know, even if he's mounted on a mount like that, you can still put him in a unit. You don't have to buy boar boys if you don't want to buy boar boys for him, which is still very, very cool. But this does bring up an interesting point as we kind of talk about starting an army. How do you feel about mixing? Like, where are you on this idea of just like, take a little bit of everything. Take spider riders, take boar boys, take goblins, take night goblins, take biggins, you know, like, do you feel like the best orc armies are the all goblins / or all orc armies? Or do you feel like the best thing to do is mix everything together and kind of find your own play style?
I would say mix. You know, I think if you want to run a pure goblin or orc or night goblin army, by all means, you're not kneecapping yourself the way you were last book. Okay. But I do think that every unit sort of brings something different to the table. Cause I mean, when you really break it down, goblins with nasty skulkers are fantastic ways to just deal with characters, you know. Yes. So if you've got a small unit of knights with a character in it, and you can throw your goblins that direction, pop out your nasty skulkers, go to town, you know, try killing blow them, you know, drop the character, drop those knights. You know, they're very good at it. Night goblins are phenomenal boogeymen with netters and fanatics. Nobody likes to sort of screw with night goblins. They really just try to stay away.
Okay, so your advice in this case is basically find the stuff that you really feel is gonna perform, the stuff that's really cool or grabs your attention, and just get it into the mixing pot and go to town.
Yeah, because honestly, I don't think there's a bad choice in this book. I don't think there is anything that you could pick up for an orc and goblin army that is going to be a waste.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
You know, so really, as long as you're building with an eye towards 8th edition, making sure you have your minimum core requirement met, you know, you can't go wrong with any characters, whether they be geared to the nines fighting orc war bosses or whether they be a goblin great shaman with an arachnorok mount. You can't go wrong, you know, or even a night goblin on a giant squig in a unit of squig hoppers. Like, it's just, there is no bad choice because they all do very different things and they all, you know, will work together. And I think the biggest thing about this orc book is it's not a list builder's book. It is a general's book.
Yeah.
Because a good general is going to be able to develop a plan to account for anything that's in his list. Cause there aren't, like I said, there are no bad choices. He's going to take what he wants. He's going to figure out how to make it all work together. And then he's going to crack skulls with it.
You know, and I feel like that's a pretty good point, but I do disagree with that. I really do feel like the most symmetric, the most synergistic lists that you're going to see for this book are going to be the pure goblin with maybe one or two orcish or otherwise type things like trolls or giants or things of that nature, or the other side of the spectrum. The pure orc army with the bits and pieces of, you know, everything else mixed in between. Now, I play a virtually pure orc army. I've got a couple goblin and snotling type things in there to kind of balance it out. But I feel like if I were to add a unit of goblins in there, like, I almost wouldn't know what to do with it, you know, as opposed to if I was going to play a goblin army, because they play very differently. You know, one, you're going to be really heavy with spears. The other one, you're going to be really heavy with choppas, you know, things of that nature.
It's true, but I mean, you know, you cannot say no to Steadfast in this edition. You know, when you've got 3-point goblins, personally, what I would say is take a unit, 5-man frontage, make them at least 7 or 8 ranks deep and throw in nasty skulkers and just say, you know what, I'm going to point you at the biggest wrecking ball of my opponent's army that has a character in it. I'm going to use my nasty skulkers to killing blow the character, force them to chew on goblins while the rest of your orcs just go to town. So, I mean, that's you can't go wrong with anything.
But that's when we start talking about the metagame of it, right? And the types of opponents that you're going to be playing. Because when I play my orc army, and it's the pure orc army, I very, very rarely have problems with Steadfast. You know, in the game I played against Mike, almost every turn in combat, I had more in terms of Steadfast than he did, just because you get in there, you do so much damage that either, you know, it's a tie in terms of who has the most ranks, or, you know, oh, okay, they get Steadfast for one turn and I chew them up another turn. It is the different mentalities of, are you playing defensively where you're focusing on Steadfast and you're focusing on special abilities to kind of keep you in the game and flanking and things of that nature? Are you playing that full forward, you know, charge and destroy type mentality of the orcs, which is why I really do feel like you're going to get the best bang for your buck. And this goes right with what you were saying about there's no bad choice in this book, but you're going to get the best bang for your buck if you're focused and you have a real plan and it's not so distracting about like, okay, well, this unit does this and this unit doesn't do this.
Yeah, you know, I get that. And that's, again, why I like the book. But, I mean, at the end of the day, there are going to be matchups where orcs won't win. You know, you're going to see that big brick of Zinch warriors with hand weapons and shields, and you're going to need a roadblock so you can deal with the rest of that Chaos army and then come around, hit it in the flanks and the rear, and just give it the killing blow.
Yeah.
And that's why, like I said, if you take goblins, they can do that because they can killing blow the BSB and the general and the wizards while you're waiting it out. But like I said, you know, I'm not saying your point is invalid. I'm just saying, you know, standing by my point of no matter what you take, you can mix it all in, throw it in, and you will find a way to use it. Like, you're never going to be at the end of a game saying, you know, God, that unit did nothing.
See, and for exactly what you said there, I would just say chariots. Give them a chariot every turn. They're not that expensive, and orc boar chariots are the best chariots point for point.
90 points?
Hell point for point out of any chariot in the game. They are the best chariots in the game because the you get the Tuskor charge on it too. So even the mounts are hitting at strength 5. And now with choppas, the guys on the back with their spears are hitting at strength 5 on the charge. So it's just like, that is a lot of strength 5 on one hit coming in. And yeah, they're dirt cheap. They're dirt cheap to buy. They're dirt cheap to put into your list. So, you know, that I got to stand by what I said about that. Now, when we start talking about putting an army together, buying and building an army, you really can't go wrong with like a starter kit, the army boxes, because you know you're going to use all of the stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that this is one of the few armies where I would say overload on characters. Between this and Vampire Counts and Empire, I would just be like, go crazy on characters. Go nuts. Don't stop till you get enough. Dun, 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 dun. But no.
You wouldn't sing Eye of the Tiger, but you'll hum that? Come on.
Hey. insert inappropriate Michael joke.
He's dead. He's dead.
And there are children in heaven too. So, you know, I think what I really like about the tactics of this book, and again, let's kind of come back to tactics here, is play the horde. Play the horde. I mean, I know that, you know, like you said, okay, I love that special character because you can make every, you know, you can make all of your units of orcs biggins, but I don't necessarily think that that's the greatest idea. Like even if you go with Grimgor and you take multiple units of black orcs and even like, you know, one of your black orcs is the immortals units or things like that, I think that that's cool, but I think play the horde. Like, that's what I have to say. I mean, that's easy and that's obvious if you're playing goblins, but if you're planning on doing like a true orc army or even a mixed army, play the horde. This is meant to be a horde book. You're going to have the most success playing this army as a horde. There's very, very few orc armies that I've ever seen succeed that have been the kind of like super elite orc armies where you're, you know, maxing out on special choices and your cores is like just the minimum requirement, because you're not going to get very far if that's what you're doing. So, yeah, play the horde and don't forget about chariots. And really, I mean, I think the biggest thing about an orc army is, like you say, it's the general's book. It's not the list builder's book, because this book has more options than virtually any other fantasy army book in terms of like units, in terms of core choices, in terms of fluff and the types of things that you can put into it. So really what it comes down to is just getting games in, you know, get a bunch of games in, start playing, start going to tournaments, you know, God forsake, go and read forums. I don't care. But like, really just, you have to gain the experience with the army, because this army If you have the experience, you can deal with when it fucks you. And trust me, it will fuck you.
You still have animosity. You know, you can still roll that one. And there goes the huge, devastating charge right. Boar Boys, right?
Oh, I've had that happen. I think in my game against Mike, my biggest unit, like my horde of biggins, turn one, animosity, they stand there. And I'm just like, no. It happens, you know? So, really, get games in, and I say pick a theme, you know, whether you're going to go full one way or full the other. But, you know, obviously, if this is an army that you're just starting out with, or if this is your first foray into fantasy, I would say, yeah, you really can't go wrong with the army box.
Yeah, no, like I said, I agree.
But get your hands on some artillery at some point. You have to have artillery. There's so much good artillery in this book, it's retarded.
Oh, the Lost Orc book was the same way. If you weren't taking artillery, you were for some odd reason, hamstringing yourself.
Yes.
Because Orc artillery has always been dirt cheap and phenomenally effective.
Yeah, I mean, when you can have a ton of stone throwers and bolt throwers and all that kind of crap in your list for next to nothing.
Yeah. All right, I have 5 pieces of artillery and 200 points spent.
Yes, I mean, you really can't go wrong. But yeah, don't ignore that. Don't forget about it. Artillery is a huge thing in this book. Even if you're just going to go pick up 2 Doom Divers, do it. You know, I mean, Doom Divers are cheaper than stone throwers now. That was one of the other changes. Because they only do D6 hits as opposed to the template.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so I mean, I love Doom Divers even that much more now. It makes up for the orkiness of it. But I don't know. Final thoughts on the book, Nathan?
A+.
Yeah.
No, you know, honestly, because I mean, like, if you were to look at all the books that came out in 2010, I would say that... that the best grade that we could have given out if we were letter grading, it would have been a B to a B+ for Dark Eldar.
And
Blood Angels being much of the same, I'd have given a C to, and we all know my opinion of the Tyranid book. so, I mean, it's, you know, and it was a really real drought year for fantasy armies because they got Beastmen and Skaven. Like, that was it, wasn't it, for 2010?
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean... Honestly, like, it's just fucking fantastic book. I can't stop talking about how great it is.
Yeah, you know? I don't say this very often, but I mean, I'm really impressed with it. I think that the work is really high quality. They put a lot of thought into it. You know, there was a lot of work that they put into 8th edition that went right into this book. I mean, they didn't just forget, and they didn't just, you know, 6 months later go like, this isn't working, change gears, and all of a sudden they're doing something completely different. You know, I think that they avoided the power creep, and they really put out like a solid, balanced, fun-to-play book that is at the same time competitive as it is like fun and new and exciting. And I'm going to sleep with it under my pillow until we play next week so I can... absorb it into my brain more and more and more. But
Wife is thrilled at that announcement, isn't she?
I do want to paint up some more stuff for my Orc and Goblins now, and I think that's the biggest compliment that you can give for any new army book is, you know, if you already have that army, you've been mm-hmm. playing it for a long time, and this new book comes out, and all of a sudden you're just like, ooh, I want to paint up some more stuff. Like, let's keep going on this. Yeah. I think that is a huge compliment that you can give. Like I said, I'm very, very impressed. Now, mm-hmm. I'm also, at the same time, not impressed at all with this week's stupidity check.
Go on.
It's your stupidity check. I just know what it is. You don't have to tell me. I know exactly what it is.
You know, but I mean, I don't know. Like, there's just so much. So, basically, I'm gonna do Grey Knights as a stupidity check, and there's so much to pick from. But I don't want to delve too much into it because, as we both know, that once that book is released, it gets an episode like this. So I just want to pick on 2 particular points that I think is a massively failed stupidity check, and the first has to do with the codex itself being the shitty soft cover. I mean, really, like, what did we start this episode out on? We talked about how phenomenal hardcover was and what a great direction it is for GW. And 3 weeks later, they're releasing a shitty soft cover, like, exactly the same as the old ones.
It's like, the safe bet. It's the safe business bet because They're just not that many people that play Grey Knights. It's not Space Marines. I mean,
it is a Space Marine army. No, kidding?
Yeah, that's not what I mean. But like orcs, there's so many orc players out there, and they know that they're going to be selling a certain amount of books. That honestly, I think this is a very, very safe bet for them. Grey Knights, not so much. So I guess I could understand it. I agree. I think it's stupid.
You're passing up
a good thing. Like, why wouldn't you do it?
I think we'll have to wait and see with whether Tomb Kings is hardcover or not. I think it will be. They're going to do that with fantasy. And so, like I said, I definitely have to say that a failed stupidity check for Games Workshop is passing on the opportunity for Grey Knights to have that as well. I love the hardcover. The other thing that I want to do a failed stupidity check on, because I mean, good God, there's literally a barrel full of shit that I can pull from for Grey Knights. But I'm saving it. Is the motherfucking space orangutan? I mean, honest to God, space orangutan, it sounds stupider the more you say it, because it really is just absolutely stupid.
Listen, I will applaud them for the fact that they're just like, we're gonna reach into the old chest and see what comes out.
Absolutely, you know, and that's the thing is, like, tip of my hat that they remembered the Yokero from what, the second and third edition.
Yeah.
Kudos, that's fantastic. But when they talked about how this was a race of non-sentient apes that could tinker with machines and just make crazy shit, you're just like, the 80s and 90s, what bad acid we had then. You know, like, it just, you could chalk it up to that, but the fact that someone was just like, oh my God, yes, green light, sculpt me a monkey. I want it on my desk by 12 o'clock tomorrow.
See, what really bothered me about the monkey, and why I think that it's a failure, is they're just like, okay, they're bringing back the old stuff. It's nostalgia. It's all good for us old gamers. I love that. I think that that's just fine. And I think that, honestly, we'll see some very interesting paint job / conversions with that thing that I am really looking forward to. But
I'm waiting for someone to do a guard army of apes and call it the Planet of the Apes army out of that model.
See, but that was exactly the thing, is I really do feel like, you know, you could just bring the design into the modern world a little bit and just make them apes or just a little bit more human. But this guy looks like it was basically like the Borg attacked a zoo. Like, that's what it looks like. It was like they're assimilating animals now and getting their own genetic distinctiveness into it, because it looks very primitive. And at the same time, the technology's on there. It looks like a bad Disney movie. I mean, it does not come together. But I'm going to jump in here because you didn't talk about what I wanted to talk about. Fuck it. The goddamn Dread Knight. I hate it. It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen. Why? Why is it out there? So that Space Marines can reach things on high shelves? You've already got a Dreadnought. Why do you need the heavy guy carrying the heavy weapons? Does it have an armor save? Does it have an armor value? Because neither make any fucking sense. Sorry.
But I mean, here is the thing. It is good to see that somebody in this world is a fan of Matrix Revolutions, because he basically looked at that scene at the end where all of us had already walked out of the theater, you know, and, you know, with those sort of mech walker things shooting guns, and he was just like, oh my God, yes, the first chance I get to sculpt one, I'm doing it.
It's got a power fist holding a thunder hammer. Why do you need a power fist holding a thunder hammer? Like, it just, this is my bolter, and attached to the bottom is an underslung bolter.
Hey, look, he can hold a big sword too. I mean, Optimus Prime has a big sword.
This goes right back to all the shit that I hate about this idea, where they're just like, just keep adding more shit. I know we don't have any more good ideas, just keep adding stuff. It drives me nuts, and it turns me off to Grey Knights in general. It turns me off to 40K. You said yourself, you read the book, you saw the models, you saw everything that came with it, and you're sitting there going, I think I'm done with 40K. And I think the thing that really bothers me about that, you know what,
this is why I didn't want to talk about the Dread Knight, because I was just like, listen, we've got a half an hour of rage pent up. uncontrollable rage that we could just talk about and just be like, why? And that's why I was just like, oh, we'll save it for the Grey Knight review episode. It's in 3 weeks. What?
Yeah.
You know, but I'm just like, you know, for me, failed stupidity check on the old school softcover codex. I mean, like, I may be a jaded gamer, but when I see a good thing, I love me a good thing. And hardcover codexes, I think, should be the future. And stupid space orangutans.
You can model the Dread Knight without a helmet.
Yeah, but we all know that all good space marines leave their helmets on the ship. Straight up.
All right, you know, let's talk a little bit about what we're working on right now. I know that you're working on your demons.
Yes.
I am actually working on about 3 different projects right now. I'm working on my Firestorm Armada fleet, my Directorate fleet, which should get done probably in about a day, maybe 2. I'm working on my Space Marines here and there, and I'm actually starting to creep more and more and more towards doing stuff for my orcs now. I'm probably going to kind of drop everything after I finish my Firestorm Armada fleet, and I'm going to start painting up a couple new things for my orc army. So maybe in the next week I'll have 2 or 3 more things painted, but other than that, that's kind of where I am right now. I'm thinking about doing some conversions, but it's funny. I've kind of moved away from conversions in all of my new army stuff now. I do very, very few conversions these days.
Oh, well, I mean, to be honest, when we were both big into conversions was when GW couldn't sculpt great models, and it was almost like a rarity where you're just like, oh my god, this model's so nice, I don't need to do anything to it.
Or it didn't cost a shit ton to bits order the parts you need, or the parts that you needed were available.
I was going
to
say, or you could bits order parts.
Ugh, bastards.
You know, but honestly, there are very few things that come out now, Grey Knights excluded, where I look at it and I'm just like, oh, what? Why would I need to do anything to it? I mean, honestly, I hate Blood Angels, but I looked at that new Dreadnought kit that came out, and I was just like, damn, that is a nice Dreadnought kit.
Yeah, I think all of the guys who have metal Grey Knights in Power Army are in Power Armor are thanking their lucky stars, because now the new box of Grey Knights in Power Armor, you only get 5, and it costs more expensive, and they're plastic. That's right, it costs more expensive.
Yay, grammar fail.
I've been drinking. No, I you know, that's more of what drives me nuts. All these new things come out, and you know, they know that you're only going to buy so many of them, so they jack the price up. You go into the store and you say, you know, why is this steam tank $35 more than the Stegodon? And they're just like, well, you might need 2 Stegodons. And like, that's their reasoning for it, even though the Stegodon kit is bigger and contains more sprues. Whatever. So you have to pay through the nose to get the model that you want now, because they're just like, that way we don't have to sell as many. And I get it, it's business, but it pisses me off, especially when I want to start these new armies and I get very jaded about these things. But no, I've been putting a lot of lists together and doing a bit of painting here and there, and been playing a couple games. Hopefully you and I are going to have a game next week, which will be another win on my record. hey, laugh all you want.
I have the immune to Lang special rule, dude. I mean, your fucking lizards are what, a perfect record unless they play me? Like, seriously.
I've been wrecking people, man. And like I said, the only reason why you won those games, outside of ridiculous, stupid, I don't even know how to play this game, but I still win luck, is because they were unpainted. Now they're painted. You're screwed. You're screwed, man. I can't lose. I can't lose.
But I've got Demons of Chaos on my side now. I can't lose.
I'm not all that worried. I got the new book. Remember Power Creep? There it is. You can't beat that. But yeah. Oh, my God. I'm having a hard time holding back from all of the rage that I want to let out.
Why do you think I was just like, I can't talk about the Dread Knight because I'm just going to go on and on and on about it. But no, like I said, for me, I'm trying to build my my 2,000 point army and paint at the same time. So it's coming along. I think I have 11 Plague Bearers left and that unit's done. So
there you go.
Yeah. My playbearers hopefully will be painted by the time we have our game next weekend, but I might be one or two short.
There you go. All right. So, as many of you also saw on the site recently, Nathan and I are going to be posting some blogs on a regular basis. This will be a kind of whenever inspiration strikes, crossed with kind of a weekly thing, I think is what we're trying to shoot for, right?
Yeah, I was trying to go for two posts a week. Tuesdays and Thursdays was my goal. My Tuesday post had like no one care. And then my Thursday post broke the local blogosphere. I think there was there's like some 60 comments between Facebook and the blog, and then I think my wife wrote a blog post afterwards, and a friend of ours, Danny, wrote a blog post. Like it basically just kind of exploded. So I was just like, wow, who knew that comp was a bad four letter word?
Yeah, hey, it's what happens, right? But I mean, you know, it's a polarizing topic. We've talked about it on multiple podcasts, and we've answered questions about it. But I think, we want to see more of that, and I definitely think that people should kind of check out the site throughout the week to see if there are any blog posts. Obviously, we are also going to be posting these blogs links up on the Facebook group as well. So if you aren't already part of the Facebook group, be sure to go ahead and add yourself to the group. It is an open group, so you don't have to ask to – or you don't need an admin to invite you. You can come and apply yourself, and then we will approve you straight away. But other than that, I think that's it for this week, man.
Yeah, like I said, I got nothing else because I'm saving it for our Grey Knight review. Saving it. Oh, I've got so much. That's why I said it's just a huge barrel of shit that I can talk about. So
yeah, I think Kyle called it the Dread Knight Pirate Robins, which I thought was very, very witty, but as he said, has nothing to do with the model.
Yeah, the Dread Knight Pirate Robins. Look, for anyone that looks at that model and is just like, oh my god, I love it, I need three, just remember, if you don't paint it like a Megazord, you have failed. Absolute failure. If you don't know what a Megazord is, double fail on you, and Google it.
So much,
I know.
All right. The thing that drives me nuts about it is...
This is Jaded Gamercast. We could go on all night.
Yeah, but we won't talk about the Dread Knight on the next one. We'll talk about its rules, but we're not going to talk about... we'll just get the modeling part off of our chest so that when we actually do the Codex review, we're talking about the Codex and the tactics as opposed to bitching about the models. But no, like I say, I think... Yay for the design or for the modelers, because the sculpt is great. It's a beautiful looking model. Don't get me wrong, but I think, you know, boo on the designers. I think this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen. And it's just a very ridiculous attempt to just sell more garbage that really has no place in the army. And, you know, boo for the company who basically looks at this army and says like, we need to add more shit. It just, you know, he can reach things on high shelves. Yay. All right, I'm done. Sorry. That's Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.